Hello and welcome to a very special edition of The Two Tones. Recorded, you may notice the acoustics are slightly different because we are at the Grand Hyatt for the 20th anniversary dinner of the 1995 Carlton Premiership. The team is being reunited, and so it's Tony Moclair and Tony DeBolfo doing the sensible thing, averting our gaze from the present to the past. All but, I think, three members of that historic team from 95, the team that won 20 out of 22 and then demolished Geelong in front of a crowd of about 95,000 people at the MCG in late September, are here tonight. Tony DeBolfo.
Yes, they are, Tony. Beautifully said, and you're looking resplendent too in your Carlton board director's tie, it seems to me, tonight. You were planning a coup of some sort?
Well, I thought tonight was the night. I'd get a few under my belt and then basically make my move. But yes, we are in our bag of fruits, and we've both scrubbed up rather well, if I say so modestly.
Yes, you may indeed. And of course, Tony, I did send out a tweet earlier this evening saying that I'll be here tonight to see the great men return. It only seemed like yesterday, Tony, that we savoured that moment in time. But I didn't quite mean literally yesterday. I meant 20 years ago yesterday, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yes. Yesterday was a different game with a different outcome. We're talking, of course, of... the game at Etihad Stadium, let's not dwell on that. Let's instead just evoke memories of what was an incredible season. And also the, I guess, mission accomplished given the years that had happened before that. 94 going out in straight sets. 93, the debacle that was that game against Essendon where Stephen Silvani touched the ball from Michael Long's boot. I've said it a million times.
You still haven't come to terms with that. But it's a fair comment you make, Tony. You know, it's often been said, you know, what is it? You know, one step back, two steps forward, I think it was. And in that case, it was two steps backward before we got to the summit. But, you know, sometimes, you know, the team really has to steel itself having gone through those moments of adversity. And I do remember after the 94 loss at Geelong at Waverley, you know, everyone thought that the bottom had fallen out of the place. And yet within 12 months, the team was up on the podium, having completed one of the all-time great grand final wins on the top of one of the greatest seasons you could ever wish to hope to see.
Coached by David Parkin.
David Parkin, who magnanimously has always said, coach Carlton in the year that the team basically coached itself.
It's a good line. He's a man with an eye for a good line, Tone, but does the reality meet the myth, I guess, if you want to say that? Was he as actually hands-on as he likes us to believe?
I'm sure he was hands-on, Tony. And look, when you think about a year like that, it takes all elements, doesn't it, coming together to make it work. And it was just one of those stand-alone years, really. I've often compared it with the 72 season, well, particularly the grand finals, where the game, to my way of thinking, was over as a contest rather early in proceedings. Yeah. And, you know, the moment where Sporting smothered that kick, led to the goal that Justin Madden, that's here tonight now, you knew when that happened that nothing was going to go wrong. This was our day. And it's amazing how those little moments in the game still stick in the memory 20 years on.
Well, speaking of Harry, he kicked a goal in, I think, was it a preliminary final in 93? And that great loping stride.
Sean ran on his hammer?
Yes, kicked it and then did the celebration afterwards. I had the same thought then. I thought, this year is our year. It was a magnificent goal and a magnificent celebration, but it didn't all go well. As well as we would have liked. But no, yes, you're right.
There are moments in games, aren't there? You know, the smothers that Matt Clappe put on Peter Dean, we've seen them in the highlights on the Carlton website through the course of this week. And also, you know, Peter Riccardi going over with a hamstring injury and to that stage of the game was probably Geelong's best player.
Yes, he was.
And you just know that, you know, it's going to script here. Nothing could possibly go wrong. And the nice thing about the 95 Grand Final was, as a spectator, you could sit back, relax and take it in. And it is exactly what David Parkin said. He said, the second half, he said he and his match committee sat back, relaxed and watched a team go through its paces, you know, the preeminent team of 1995.
Well, just watching that first quarter again, what's remarkable, I mean, I guess you see it most grand finals, I won't say all grand finals, but the intensity, that was a contested ball.
Yes.
Yeah, players... Yes. You know, players were desperate for possession, and you mentioned Peter Dean. He was on that day from the word go.
Peter Dean, Matt Clappe, Ange Christou, the rebounding halfback, you know, Michael Sexton, consummate professional. They were all up and about, weren't they? And you know, as I said earlier, the elements all fell into place, and it was a lay down Mazaire pretty early in the piece. We're here with Matt Clappe, one of the heroes of the 1995 Grand Final. What a day it was, Matt. And just before you came to the microphone, Tony and I were mentioning about how on a big day like that, how things seem to fall into place. And we talked about the little smothers here and there. And I know you and Deanie made it an art form through the 95 Grand Final that year. But all the elements seemed to work on that big day, which was fantastic for David Park and the team.
It was a fantastic day, and that's probably one of the main things I could do. I don't know about Deanie, he was a lot better than I, but the likes of Spalding and Rice and myself, smothers and knock-ons and things like that were our forte, whereas, you know, Brickbrack Brattle's getting 40 possessions and Sticks taking huge marks and things. So we all knew our place, but on the day, the team just seemed to fall into place, and for me it was a fantastic year after 4 years with West Coast, and then just almost slotting into a role there that throughout the year worked exceptionally well, and on the day was fantastic. I still live it now.
Timing is everything, and you mentioned 4 years at West Coast. What were the machinations which led to you coming to Princes Park?
Obviously 4 years there, I was about a third or a fourth emergency in the 92 Grand Final with West Coast, so a long way away basically from playing still, and then nowhere near it in their 94 Premiership. So, just not getting, I suppose, an opportunity there, and I wasn't on my own there. They had a very strong team early 90s, and there's a number of guys that played. Matty Connell sort of comes to mind at Adelaide, a couple of best and fairest at Grand Final there as well, and I think he played one game at West Coast when he was there. So it was probably along those lines where lack of opportunity, you just put yourself in the ring and say, okay, or in the hat, I suppose, and see what happens. And we actually had spoken to Adelaide a fair bit, and before the March draft, and in the end I think I probably put it down to someone like Ken Judge, who had seen me play in the Waffle a fair bit, and got us to Carlton, and basically here 2 or 3 weeks after that, and had one game at Gosher's Paddock, got some stitches in the back of the head, and then the next week was against Collingwood, got a few kicks, which was good.
Off you went.
Can you tell us that moment, Matt, when you see your name on the team list for a Grand Final?
Look, for me, it was, for probably my wife and I, it was the end of, I suppose, a big, what you would call a trail, I suppose, or a few years and things like that. There's the Hector there. Fantastic at the end of the day. Playing with the likes of a Peter Dean who, you know, hasn't changed a bit these days. The names of Kernahan and Williams and, you know, McKay's and Bradley's, and just basically rubbing shoulders with some of those legends of the game was, very humbling. And the end of the day, well, probably half-time.
Yeah.
Half-time, it was pretty much over.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say never, but in those days, you know, we actually had a bloody good first half, and you walk off at half-time going, well, all we have to do is hold them out and we've got this. So it was, fantastic.
And I do remember though, Stephen Silvani saying he didn't think it was over because he was standing Ablett.
Correct.
And it was always that danger, you know. So I don't think he was relaxing quite as much as the rest of them.
No, we were up the other end.
And Matt, moment's indulgence, but can you relate the story in respect of Monday at Norton's? Because in the 1995 Premiership photo, there's two men sporting very short haircuts, in fact, crew cuts. One of them is Scott Campriali, coach of Adelaide, can't be here tonight. The other is your good self.
Yes.
Can you relate the story about those haircuts for a moment?
I can. What I'd firstly say is don't ever do it, because mine has never grown back after that day. But, Monday, obviously Mad Monday, as it affectionately known, and Norton's was obviously the spot where we went every year, and obviously Carlton have done for a number of years, so I've learnt. There wasn't too many people that day keen on a tattoo or anything like that. I asked a few questions. I actually probably wouldn't have gone down the track anyway, but in the end, I said, come on, Campo, let's go next door and shave our heads. Just as a
barber shop up the road?
It was actually next door, yeah, well, just up the road.
So, yeah, kind of old school barber shop, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we walked in and obviously a little bit under the weather, which my kids have now seen that online video, which what not a great thing. But yeah, walked in there and got our heads shaved, and I think Mr. and Mrs. Camparelli weren't too happy with the photo the next day. So, but it's one of those things you do. And
you walk back, by the way, into the bar with holding a pair of electric shears, offering haircuts. I got one.
Best haircut
I ever had.
So. Thank you. Well, so does that explain Matt Clappe's journey after football? Do you now have your own salon?
As you can see, I don't have much to work with, unlike the beast.
I need those shears again, mate. If you've got them in your pocket, drag them out.
No, I've got a wholesale business. Just we wholesale household appliances with it. My old boss got into business with him, so in WA, which the WA economy is a little bit flat at the moment, but other than that, we're still going fine, yeah.
And you, of course, still involved with the club. You presented a jumper last week when Carlton played Freo.
Yeah, look, it's people at West Coast sort of asked us a lot of times what it's like when you went to Carlton, having gone from West Coast. I said the biggest thing with the Carlton Footy Club is the history. You walk in that front door, or at those days, the front door of the football department, and there's a massive big poster of Bisasto taking a grab, and you walk down the hallway and there's Ken Hunters, and for me it was all of these West Australian legends, and there was just a huge history about the club, and that's what they do really well. And you know, Woosha came over and went back to West Coast, and he sort of started to bring a fair bit back to that club for past players. And so Andy McKay sort of called me up and said, look, we've started this little tradition recently about presenting players with their jumpers, and I said, yeah, look, happy to do it. And that's just something I think Carlton do really well. They bring us all back into the fold and keep us around the club, and you know, times are tough at the moment, and it's probably even more important to do those things and come back and support the players now and really help out.
Matt Clappe, thank you so much for joining us. Last question, quick answer. Your premiership jumper, proud number 6 on the back, where is it at the moment?
My wife has had it framed and with the medal and a few photos, so it is up on the wall, although
excellent.
It was in the drawer for a long number of years.
Okay, well, good to hear it's on proud display,
thank you.
Thank you so much, Matt Clappe, for joining us.
Thanks, Matty.
Cheers, guys.
Good idea. Well, we're here with Dean Rice, Tony and I. Dean Rice, another one of the premiership players of that all-conquering Carlton team of 1995. Dean, terrific to see you in the house. Does it seem like 20 years ago?
No, actually, you see a few of the guys here tonight just walking the door. Actually, it's like you saw him yesterday, so time does fly.
Can I just say, continuing a theme, Tony, you are the third player from the 95 team that we've interviewed. You've all stayed well within your playing weight.
Yeah, if you saw me about 12 months ago, I wasn't, but no, I just got myself on a bit of a fitness campaign over the last 12 months, dropped a few kilos, and feeling all right.
Was that the pressure of tonight? You had to fit into the suit, you had to look good for the guys, was that it?
No, it was more just to make sure that my health was okay and look after myself.
Dean, Carlton were blessed to get you across from Moorabbin, you know, at the time of your career, and I'm sure when you reflect on that moment in time, you know, you must feel that same way, that, you know, things perhaps sometimes happen for a reason. But the thing I remember probably at your first foray into Carlton was the knee collapsing at the MCG that night, so early on in the piece. Can you tell the listeners what David Parkins said to you the night that you buckled with your knee, you were going to be out for 12 months?
Yeah, actually, when I did do it, I think it was about the second quarter, so I remember sitting on the bench thinking that was the end of my career, and lucky Parker came in at halftime and saw me in the medical room and just told me that don't worry about it, we'll give you every chance of getting yourself back and not to stress too much about it, which is probably all I needed to give me the motivation to really work hard and get myself back.
And that must have been a tremendous, tremendous thing to have the coach give you the seal of approval there. And really from that moment on at Carlton, you never looked back. You strung them together and you were there for that great moment in the sun.
Yeah, look, as I said, that's all I really needed to know that the club was behind me and I was going to give it everything. You know, I did it once before. I knew I could do it again. So, to to the end of the day that I end up playing in a premiership side the next year. So maybe that was, again, that was a reason why that sort of thing happened.
Can we just talk about that moment, Ricey, you know, from that injury to going down the race to a packed MCG late September? What do you remember specifically? What comes to mind? What is most evocative of the day for you?
In the grand final?
Yeah.
I guess it was more the crowd, you know, beforehand and also after the game. You know, walking around after winning the premiership and seeing seeing all the supporters and knowing how much it meant to them and all that sort of stuff, that'll stick in my mind forever.
Were you the nervous type, you know, and to that end, how did you settle yourself? You know, that's the biggest stage in football. How do you compose yourself for the job at hand?
I never really got nervous before games. I know certain guys got nervous by doing certain things like throwing up and all that sort of stuff and had certain routines, but I never had that. So I was probably lucky in that way, and I just treated it as another game, and that's the way I went about it.
And Matt Clappe was on air earlier to say that he pretty much felt by half time it was done and dusted. Did you feel the same way?
Oh, probably, yeah, in a way, but you never know in footy. You never know until probably you realise when you're halfway through the last quarter when you're 70 points up that, you know, you probably got it in the bag. But, you did have a feeling at half time you were travelling pretty well, and if we kept playing the way we did, we're going to win the game easily. So
it's a question we're asking every player tonight, Ricey. The medallion and your jumper, where are they? Bearing the proud number 23, where would you find them at the moment?
Oh, I think they're at the bottom of my drawer somewhere.
That's a work
in progress. Yes. Matt Clappe said his were at the bottom of the drawer, but what's he done, Tony?
He's framed it.
Yes, he's got the Guernsey frame, the medallion frame, and photographs too. So,
I guess he set the trend, so I better start doing something about that.
All right. Dean Rice, thank you so much for your time. You were a crucial part of that 95 Premiership team, and it's just thrilling to have you on the podcast.
No worries. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
We're with Michael Sexton, the 1995 Grand Final reunion. Football's night of nights, certainly in Carlton Town tonight, Michael. It'd be no better place to be, would there?
No, it's fantastic. It's good to catch up with a few people that I haven't seen for a while and to celebrate a great time.
Tony has mentioned to some of our previous teammates of yours how well they look 20 years on. A lot of them still look at the ideal playing weight, and you look like you could pretty much run out. Is that the case?
Yeah, actually, we had a bit of a catch-up a couple of months ago, and I was actually impressed with how everyone was looking too. So 20 years down the track, I think most of us are doing pretty well.
None of us have aged, Mick. It's the truth.
Right, yeah. Can I tell you, is given how the team is going, it's a thrilling prospect that these guys may actually hit the paddock for us next week. We could do worse. Anyway, yeah. Michael, of course, we're talking about, you know, that day in September. The specific memory that comes to mind when you think about 1995, we've talked about the game, or the feeling in the rooms at halftime that the game was won, but Soss saying no because Gary Ablett could cut loose at any minute. Yeah. What are your specific recollections of the day?
My main thing, I think, was just an enormous sense of relief. I think we felt as though we just absolutely had to win, and given our form of the year or two prior to that, I think we felt in the final series prior in 94 we let ourselves down a little bit. Mm. And for the talent we had in our side, I think we needed a premiership. And I think from my point of view, it was just an enormous sense of relief.
At the end of the 94 final series, as bitter as it was, did you actually believe in your heart of hearts that the team could come back? Or at that particular moment in time, did you thought the window had closed?
Oh, no. I mean, I think we had a tremendously talented lineup, and I was devastated at the end of 94. I thought we could have done much better than what we did, obviously. And, you know, I was quite confident that we still had another good year or two in us.
And you mentioned the feeling of relief in the game itself. At what point in the game did that sense of relief begin to permeate?
Really, not completely until the final siren, but I think certainly, you know, after the early stages of the last quarter, you know, we started to think, you know, you're sort of 10 goals up and that sort of thing, and it was going to be very, very hard for them to get back from there. So I think, you know, I perhaps started to enjoy it a little bit more at that point.
Yeah. You backs get it hard, don't you? Because Matt Clappe was saying up the other end, they were cracking the champagne corks before half time. So it ain't fair, is it?
Yeah, that's right. We're probably a little bit pessimistic.
But you look at those, you mentioned 94, there were those two games against Melbourne and then Geelong, and at Waverley, and they had no Bairstow or Coucher, Ablett. And then there were the two games in the middle of 95, Sydney and St Kilda. Can you speak to what may have happened in either of those two games? Where did you mention the depth of talent? They were just so against the trend.
Yeah, they're very much aberrations in there, weren't they? But no, we didn't just lose them. I think we lost them quite badly as well. And I remember after the St Kilda game, the second week, I reckon it was one of the best bakes Parko has ever given us. And it was just, I think the week coming after, I think it might have been Hawthorn. It might have been a challenging game the week after. And I reckon from the first 5 minutes of that game, we really set the tone then, and I knew we were back on track.
We were talking about that game last week. We were told 9-goal, 1 first quarter.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah.
So that really set the tone. Yeah. And reflecting again on the final game, the big one, the sense of nerves, was it something that you had to deal with, or it wasn't an issue for you running out, or how did you sort of steel yourself to get through the experience of a grand final?
I guess there's always nerves there. I don't ever look back on, I played in 3 grand finals, and I can't really think that nerves were a huge thing. I think you're just so caught up in the moment. I think you're just there and you have a job to do, and I think the main thing is just I think you feel incredibly focused at those times, and you know, perhaps you are nervous, but it's not something that I remember back and reflect upon, really.
Who was your opponent that day, and have you caught up with him since?
Billy Brownless, I played
on. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you'd see a fair bit of
and,
him around the traps.
I have run into him a couple of times,
And what's his recollection of the day?
Well, not good, obviously. Not as good as mine.
Okay, enough said there. We're asking all players, Michael Sexton, before you go, your jumper, the number 14 that you wore so proudly for the club, the game Guernsey of that day, and your medal, where are they? Because we have somebody going through your house right now, and they'd really like to know.
My jumpers, I've got a few, all my footy jumpers are just in a wardrobe upstairs at home in one of the spare rooms, actually, and I've got, I think, one framed downstairs in the study, which was might have been a 200 game or one on a time, and I think the rest are pretty much away in safekeeping somewhere, and they'll come out at some point, maybe with kids or grandkids. And my medal is down in the study with all the other footy paraphernalia I have. Yeah.
And we believe that both items would still fit snugly on top of your torso, Michael.
I could probably squeeze into them still. Yeah.
There you go. Well, we're not going to ask you. You'll be relieved to know. Michael Sexton, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, Mick.
Good on you guys.
We're here tonight with Fraser Brown, one of the heroes of the 1995 Premiership team at the Carlton Football Club. Fraser, great to see you in the room. Your memory of the game in that year is vivid. What could you tell us about your recollections?
Recollections, I was injured to the bejeebers and took a lot of convincing, a lot of bullshies, and so to speak, to get onto the pitch.
I can remember that phrase vividly because in my role as a Herald Sun journalist, I was on Brown watch, dog watch, for that week down at the Alfred Hospital.
Are you Fraser aware of the rumour that went around?
Fraser was in the hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, and I was stuck down in there, yes.
And do you remember there was another bloke in there that was getting, he was scurrying through the top, and Fraser said to me, "That bloke's mad." And I said, coming from Fraser, I said, that is saying something.
Sitting there with one eye on him and one eye on the door.
The rumour that I was told at the time was somebody came up to me. I was working at a radio station and they said, "Have you heard about Fraser Brown?" I said, "No." "Yeah, it's not good. He's in the hyperbaric chamber and his testicles have swollen up to the size of a watermelon." And
I just already swollen before I went in there.
I thought, well, it goes to Premiership.
Fraser, it was magnificent that you made it on, because I know you were battling time the week and so forth, and it was really a one-man crusade. I think you spent the whole week down at the Alfred.
No, that Thursday night, in the rooms, it was touch and go.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, that Thursday night, I was... I wouldn't have normally played, obviously, but such a good side, such a good team. I knew they could carry me.
And,
full stop.
And when did you know in that particular game that you had it? A few of the boys up the back line have said, we weren't relaxing until late. But then I spoke to Matt Clapard. He said, we thought it was all over at half time. When did you think?
Yeah, half time, I think. Yeah. It's all done. Yeah. Done and dusted half time, obviously. Can't remember what we were up. I can't remember those specific things out of any quarter of any game of football ever. It might have had something to do with the aftermath.
And but then again, here we are 20 years on, still celebrating. Anyone that plays in a premiership, whatever competition, whatever division it is, they're never forgotten, are they? And the players have that unique bond.
Oh, no, to achieve what you set out as a junior is the ultimate of the ultimate. Yeah, very, what's that word, DeBolf? I'm looking for very satisfying and fulfillment came over and relief, I suppose, once you achieved that goal.
On a night like tonight, when you do, I mean, how regularly does the team catch up? One of the players, I think, might have been Matt Clappe, says, I think you guys have met up informally, possibly, but is how often does the team get together?
Oh, no, I'd say it's like any working organisation. I think there's splinter groups and splinter friendships like any group of people anywhere. And, you know, I catch up with Rats and, you know, Diesel and Hannah and those type of guys, you know, a couple of times a year maybe.
Yep.
So it's just like any other working group that you work with over a period of time in the past, you know, like 20 years ago, and we've all grown up, had kids and moved on and getting grey and fat.
Well, we won't mention, you were actually, we're saying most players are within their playing weight at the moment. Fraser, can I be bold enough to kind of put you on the spot and give yourself a dramatic or an honest self-examination? How close are you to your playing weight,
do you think? I'm an extremely disciplined person. And extremely fit. I don't drink, and I'm a vegetarian.
Okay, there we go.
And now, I'm becoming a Mormon.
Right. Last question before you go, Moran.
20 over.
Speaking of 20, where is the 20 jumper in the medallion?
I wouldn't have a clue.
There you go.
I think my mum had it at one stage, but hopefully she's still got it in safekeeping because I wouldn't know.
It'll be safely tucked away, Fraser, I'm sure.
Tucked away in the safe.
Mate, thank you so much.
Thanks for talking, Fraser. Great to see you tonight, and I'll have one with you later on, for sure.
Tone, we have to wrap it up now, but my God, you look around this room. It's a who's who. It is a hall of legends.
We're kids in a candy store, Tony, that's for sure.
God.
It is magnificent, isn't it? And what a night it's going to be. The nice thing is that we've got these players early too, so they're lucid.
Yes.
And 20 years on, the memories are quite vivid, which is terrific.
Good point, Tone. David Parkin is also in the room.
He's in the house.
Yeah, I can see him kind of in a confab with Dino and Sossi, we didn't get to speak to. This is going to be a wonderful night, a time to look at a year of unprecedented success, hopefully as a springboard to more success to come.
Ain't that the truth?
This has been the Two Tones at the Carlton 1995 20th reunion dinner at the Grand Hyatt. Tony Bolfo, Tony Moakley signing out now, and we will catch you next week.